Let's take a deep breath. We close our eyes. We see in the middle of our mind a little ball of golden light, and we watch this light as it begins to grow larger and larger, until now it covers the entire inner vision of our mind. We see for ourselves within this light a beautiful temple. We see a garden that surrounds the temple and a body of water that flows through the garden. We see that the inside of the temple is lit by this same beautiful golden light. And here we are, for we have been drawn together by the power and in the presence of God. We devote our time spent together tonight, all of our relationships and experiences of one another, to Him. And we pray that His holiest Spirit be upon us, lifting us above and beyond the sorrows and fears, limitations and conflicts of this world, to the love and to the peace that lay beyond. And so it is. Together we all say, Amen. Okay, so we begin with the idea that the, and going to put the lights back down the way they just were, that would be great, thank you. We begin with the idea that the spiritual universe is perfect. Now, the spiritual universe does not exist in space and time, but the spiritual universe is that which is a reflection of the mind of God. It is eternal and it is indestructible. You are also not of space and time. You are an idea in the mind of God, and your natural dwelling place, the truth of who you are, is in the spiritual universe. Now, when I say in, that is not to imply a spatial relationship. It is merely that you are of the spiritual universe. Now, in that spiritual universe, where all is eternally and unalterably perfect, you might say, well, obviously, we're not living here in the spiritual universe. To an extent, that is correct. In that, this realm of time and space, the body realm, is not an extension of the spiritual universe. It is rather a product of the human mind. It is a product of the human mind in that the body's realm represents an illusionary veil that stands before the spiritual universe. Each one of us has a feeling within that somehow this realm is not really our home. And the reason we all feel somewhat alien on this plane is because we are. This plane is not our home. Our home, the home of our true self, is the spiritual universe, and we all feel a constant longing to return. Not only do we feel a constant longing to return, but what the Course in Miracles describes as an ancient melody is always calling us to return. Now, we don't escape the realm of the veil of illusion through physical death. We escape the veil, we escape the realm of illusion through extending our perceptions beyond the physical senses, extending our perception beyond what the body registers as true to what the heart knows to be true. Now remember, the spiritual universe, the truer world which lies beyond this one, is a realm of perfection. This world is a world that is a product, it is manufactured by the mind, whereas the spiritual universe is an extension of the mind of God. God Himself has sent His Spirit, has sent an extension of His mind into our mind, because our mind is split. One part of us is still at home in the spiritual universe, eternally at peace. But there is another part of the mind that has been, as it were, captured by the thinking of this dimension, captured by a thought that puts fear and guilt and separation and conflict and judgment and blame and all that which derives from those things before us first. And there is a name, one name, the name that is used in the Course in Miracles, for that thought in which we are dispossessed, by which we are held hostage by the thinking that dominates this world, and in the Course in Miracles, that's called the ego. And all ego thought derives from the belief that we are separate from the spiritual universe. And because the spiritual universe is the truth of who I am, the spiritual universe of divine perfection is also the truth of who you are. So I cannot feel at one with the spiritual universe unless I feel at one with you. So if I see anything in you and deem it true that is other than the spiritual perfection about you, to that extent, I will feel cut off from spiritual perfection. Because I only get to feel my divine perfection and that I am at home in the spiritual universe if I am willing to see that that is what you are, just as it is what I am. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have a body just like me. Doesn't mean you don't make mistakes just like me. But if I stop my perception at what I see you do or hear you say, if I limit my perceptions of you to the truth of you as you exist as a body in the material plane only, then I cannot experience real peace with you. I cannot experience the spiritual peace and love with you. Why? Because that is not who you are any more than it is who I am. Now, the ego mind says, if you act a certain way and say certain things, then I will feel that peace. But the problem with that is you're probably not going to keep it up 24/7. So as long as I'm looking to your personality and who you are on the material plane to give me the peace that I long for, you know, it's not that you're looking for love in all the wrong places. You're looking for love through the wrong filter. It's not that you are not the source of my happiness, because you in your ultimate reality are the source of my happiness, because you are part of the mind of God just as I am. Now remember, God sent his spirit into our mind so that in the moment when we register confusion and cannot find the spiritual universe, because we're basing our sense of reality on something that happened on the material plane, and so we are upset. I see guilt in you. If I see guilt in you, that means by definition, in the moment I see guilt in you, in that moment, I am not seeing the truth of who you are. So in that moment that I'm seeing guilt in you, I'm limiting my perception to your body. Therefore, I am forgetting who I am. Because if I don't see if I don't extend my perception beyond what my body's eyes perceive to what my heart knows to be true in you, I cannot experience that peace within myself. What do you call that? What do we call that thing that happens when something has occurred on the material plane, our perception of that event is limited to what is happening on the material plane, and then to us with the ego mind, it feels like everything has gone wrong. That is called a problem. And that's what I want to talk to you about tonight. What do we do when there's a problem? Okay, now, I told you, isn't that funny when that. Okay, now, here's the spiritual universe in which all is perfect. Here's the material plane in which problems occur. Now, the problem always exists because my mind or somebody else's mind has taken things in a direction which might not have been the purest expression of love. Okay. Now, or maybe we did, but that's not how I'm seeing it at the moment. That could be true, too. Okay. Now, the universe, the spiritual universe, does not, which is God, does not say, wow, you're in trouble. Wow, I hope things get better. That's not what God does. Because God is the answer to every problem the moment the problem occurs. Because the universe being so perfect, and remember, you are of the spiritual universe. All that this world is about is a place where we have forgotten that we are one with the spiritual universe. We can't actually separate ourselves from the spiritual universe. And the spiritual universe being perfect is not unable to correct what happens on this plane. But we have free will. So if I keep my thinking stuck to ego thinking here, then all I will do is manufacture this realm of illusion, which seems real because it's a three-dimensional physical reality. But one expression, one word for the bridge that takes us back from the mortal material plane of the problem to the spiritual universe of perfection, the word that is used in the Course in Miracles, which is the traditional word used in all Christ-centered philosophy, is the Holy Spirit. Now, there are different words for this. The idea, the point is, however, that we are not doomed to remain in this situation. Rather, when we are in this situation, just like when Dorothy, all she had to do was click her heels together three times, I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to go home. The ego mind will say, I need to fix the situation. This person needs to act differently. That person needs to talk differently. I need to control this. I need to fix that. I need to figure this out. But the mind that is saying, I need this person to act differently, I need that person to talk differently, I need to fix this, and I need to figure this out, is the mind that manufactures problems. Are you with me? Now remember, when Dorothy said, I want to go home, when the good witch said, all you had to do was say, I want to go home, I want to go home, I want to go home, Dorothy, who I always assumed was outraged at that point to be told that's all she had to do, she said, why didn't you tell me? And the good witch said, you wouldn't have believed me. And that's true of most of us. Most of us, if you're in this room, you're ready to hear, all I have to do is ask to go home. But before you got here, you probably slept with some scarecrows and lay down in some poppies and all that kind of stuff. Right? But be that as it may, now you're ready. And you've really gotten that one thing that you thought you could make happen if you slept with enough scarecrows and laid down with enough poppies or whatever it was something that turned out not to be the Wizard of Oz after all. And that's usually when we're ready to hear the good witch tell us all you really have to do. And that is that when we are in the midst of the problem, the same mind that made the problem has all kinds of ideas how to get out of the problem. But we are trained to know, in this moment, all I have to remember is the spiritual universe is perfect, whether I'm aligned with it or whether I'm not aligned with it. So if I will, in the midst of the problems of the material plane, remember what is true, the spiritual universe is not only perfect, but the spiritual universe, like a divine GPS, even if I made a wrong turn, even if somebody else made a wrong turn, the spiritual universe will simply recalibrate my path. There's a term that a lot of traditional Christians say, what man intended for evil, God intends for good. That there's nothing that can make God say, I'd love to take you back to divine peace and perfection, but you really messed up, buddy. My hands are tied. God, rather, has placed within our minds the capacity for miracles. Now, what does that mean? A miracle is a shift in perception. A miracle is a shift from the problem is real to the thought, this problem is not real. This problem is happening within a three-dimensional reality, but it does not have eternal reality. Love is real and nothing else exists. This is all an illusion. My perception of it as a problem is an illusion. Either the problem can be completely dissolved, completely obliterated, or completely transformed into an experience of love, perfection, and joy, but not by me. And so in that moment, what you want is a miracle. It's like the ads that used to say, coulda, hadda, V8. Always remember, what you need is a miracle. It's not that you think you need the scarecrow. You think you need the lion. You think you need the Wizard of Oz. No, no, no. What you need is a miracle. What you need in that moment, and this is what we are trained, this is what is a miracle worker you are trained to do, to remember in this moment, nothing real can be threatened, nothing unreal exists. I am experiencing this as a problem. But the truth of the matter is the spiritual universe, the realm of divine perfection, knows how to completely transform this problem. I, however, do not. Number one, God's plan works. Number two, yours does not. And when we try to fix a problem, often trying to fix it from the same mind that, as I said, makes problems, that's when we're in trouble. You know, the Course in Miracles makes it clear, it's not that you make a mistake and God sends you to hell. Quite the opposite. The mind of the mistake is hell. God is not that which sends you to hell. God is that which delivers us from hell. It is the ego mind that takes us to hell. And God is that which delivers us from the hell of our own making. So when we say, I cannot with my mortal mind even imagine what could make this right. We are used to thinking that if I can't imagine an answer, then we're cast into this illusion that there is no answer. But the Course in Miracles talks about the answer with a capital A. Because remember, there really is only one problem from a Course perspective. There's only one problem and there's only one answer. The only problem, regardless of what form the problem took, is a deviation from love. And the only answer is a return to love, which is the shift in perception from the realm of fear to the realm of love. So you say, I want the answer. I can't even imagine what that answer would be. It is beyond my even imagining, but of course it's beyond your imagining. It's a miracle. And it comes out of a quantum field. The spiritual universe is a quantum field. It doesn't work in a linear fashion because it is not tied to the realm of time and space. Now, this is the deal. The Course in Miracles says that there is no such thing as a neutral thought. There is no such thing as an idle thought. Every thought creates form on some level. So, the Course in Miracles says the primary responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. What does that mean? Okay. Dear God, I have a problem. And because of this problem, I am tempted to blame so-and-so. Because of this problem, I am tempted to think that I need to go out and manufacture a solution. Because of this problem, I am tempted to believe that illusions are real. I am tempted to blame someone else or myself. I am tempted to judge someone or myself. However, to the extent to which you do those things, to that extent, the miracle cannot flow into and through you, because only a mind of love is a conduit for the miracle. Miracles occur naturally as expressions of love. So if I have a problem, my mind is trained by the thinking of the world to say, it's because of what so-and-so did. And now the universe, the moment so-and-so did whatever I think was not perfect, the universe is on it. The universe is ready to recalibrate in that moment. There's nothing anybody can do to limit the infinite capacity of the spiritual universe. The universe is on it. The universe doesn't go, I'm scared. God doesn't do that. God is infinite. That's why, as I describe that, what I call the law of divine compensation, if there's a problem, the universe is ready to compensate. But if I am stuck in being angry at that person who I think caused the problem, for instance, what I'm doing, if I stay in judgment or blame at myself or whoever else that I think created the problem, then what happens is I'm actually deflecting the miracle that would otherwise fix the problem. Does that make sense? So when the Course in Miracles says the primary responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself, we are trained to see, oh, I get what's happening here. It appears that my plan for all things good has been ruined because of what that person did. I am limited by that somebody else screwed up, or maybe it's myself. It doesn't matter. And then, because that's the way I've conceptualized the problem, I go into judgment, I go into blame, I go into reaction. And then I think the problem is what they did, and I, of course, have a right to be angry. I have a right to be judging them. Look what they did. I have a right to feel this way. Nobody's arguing you have a right to feel whatever you want to feel. You know, this doesn't, to understand the laws of consciousness is not should or should not. It's just thought you might like to know. You can get angry if you want to get angry. You can go into judgment if you want to go into judgment. You can go into blame if you want to. You can do whatever you want. The point is, in that space, you cannot have a miracle. And in a space of love, a miracle occurs naturally. Now, this is completely different than the thinking of the world. And he says about in the Course in Miracles, he says, my way is not difficult, but it is different. What I just said does not represent something that's difficult. It represents something that is different. And one of the things in the Course that I think is so powerful, he says, you would not indulge in sane behavior on your part. If you were about to behave insanely, you would probably stop yourself and go, no, I'm not going to do that. That would be nuts. But he says in the Course in Miracles, neither should you indulge in sane thinking. Because your insane thinking is going to ultimately, all of our thinking, the Course in Miracles says, will then determine our behavior. And that's why we have to go beyond behavior modification. Because we all know, you know, sometimes behavior modification is important. You know, you can, what do they say? You can think yourself, you can act yourself into a new way of thinking more easily than you can think yourself into a new way of acting. So, you know, sometimes it's a temporary device. Behavioral modification is the name of the game. Just bite your tongue and don't push the send button. However, ultimately, it's going to have to be a change of thinking, or something's going to happen some night, you're going to have a reactive moment, and you are going to push the send button. You're going to betray yourself. So ultimately, the reason we're training our thinking is just like no different than how we train our bodies or anything else. You want to have strong attitudinal musculature. And the thinking of the world will always tempt us. It will tempt us into blaming the other person. It will tempt us into reacting. It will tempt us into all the negative thoughts that are often supported by the thinking of the world. You have a right, you have every right to feel angry right now. Well, of course we have, as I said, you have the right, you deserve to feel whatever you want, and processing our feelings is an important thing. But as we talk about here often, there comes a point where it stops being processing and it starts being indulging. There's a difference between processing your feelings and indulging your feelings. You know, and our generation has really come up a lot with, if I explain it, we have very weird ways, very cunning and insidious ways of justifying our own insanity. Because after all, I've, you know, only been sober a year, or I'm not that old, I don't have a job, whatever it is. And in our generation, it takes the form of always an excuse why we haven't quite grown up yet. And this is a serious issue for our civilization, because we come up with the most amazing excuses why we're not quite ready to do the right thing. We're not quite ready, you see, because I have so much that I'm going through. And this is very, very dangerous. And it's not only dangerous for our own lives, it's dangerous for the whole country. It's dangerous for the whole planet, because it's like we're sitting here looking at real problems and coming up with reasons why we're not part of the solution rather than putting ourselves in the service of that which is the solution. Now, sometimes we'll say, well, I just can't yet, I'm not ready. There's a lot of that, I'm not ready. When I am more enlightened, when I've been in whatever my transformation and recovery, whatever it is, longer, I will be ready. But if you think about it, given the state of the planet today, if we're going to wait till we're all enlightened masters to stand up like grown-ups and do what needs to be done to save this planet for future generations, God help us all. We don't have time. And time does not exist. We don't have to be perfect. God is perfect. He says in the Course, do not be concerned about your own readiness. Just be consistently aware of mine. Don't be concerned about your own readiness. Be consistently aware of mine. We sometimes think, I have to make myself perfect. I have to get my life all together. I got to get everything handled. And then once I have made my life right, I will give my life to God. Later, but there is no later, because in the quantum field there is no time. Rather, you don't wait till your life is all together and then give it to God. We give our lives to God while we are a mess. We say, I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. And I don't know why I should think I know how to fix this because I'm the one who got myself into this. This is why this is not self-help. You're the problem. You are not the solution. Right? It's rather, dear God, you know my weaknesses and you know my strengths. And you know, in all spiritual literature, there is, it's part of the tenderness and the mercy and the miracle of the universe that it takes us wherever we are. In fact, there's one part, the Course in Miracles says that the plan for the correction, the miracle that takes us away from our problems, is always one in which it will be perfect, even more perfect on a certain level than it would have been had the problem not occurred. That's how powerful God is and how merciful God is. That God doesn't just say, oh, I'll fix the problem. God says, not only am I going to fix the problem, but I'm going to turn it even to a greater blessing for you because you turn to me. And that's that whole idea that, you know, God loves the sinner, and Rajneesh said, because they tend to be more interesting people. That when we, I love that one, because when we have deviated, that's the story of the prodigal son, that the father rejoiced more with the return of the son who had left than he rejoiced to see the son who had never left because of what it takes for us to go. And the story I tell so often about how in my own life at the beginning when I would read these books and really know that if I got myself into some big problem, all I had to do was really pray, ask for a miracle. Marianne, where are you judging? Marianne, where are you being reactive? Marianne, where are you being angry? Marianne, where are you being negative? Got it, check, got it. No reaction, no anger, no whatever. Being loving, being forgiving, being merciful, being compassionate, being forgiving, get it. And then the more you do it, the more you go, oh, wow, there's a miracle. And then you go back and live your life until the next terrible problem. Okay. Where am I being reactive? Where am I not being compassionate? Where am I not being forgiving? Where am I being blaming? Where am I being judgmental? Where am I attacking? Got it. Check. Miracle. Thank you, God. Okay, go back and live your life. It's like you fall on your knees and you get it right, then you saunter off into living the way you used to live. And after enough times, you say to yourself, next time I fall on my knees and am willing to have my mind be a channel for love, don't ever get back up. Next time you fall to your knees, just stay there. Live from that place, or try to live from that place. We're not imperfect enlightened masters, but that's what it means in the Course in Miracles to say that we want to devote each day to miracles, that the universe is perfect, that not only is the universe perfect, but the spiritual universe can't even register war and violence and environmental destruction and income inequality and oppression, torture, atrocities. But those things do occur here on this planet. And the Course in Miracles says, not only in terms of my individual life or your individual life, is the universe more than ready to recalibrate and fix it the moment it occurs, the universe is also completely capable and completely ready to take those collective problems that I just mentioned and turn that around miraculously as well. But the spiritual universe cannot come onto this plane unless human minds are its conduit. Because free will means free thinking. We can think whatever we want to think. God himself will not violate the law of cause and effect. So if I want to think the thoughts of the problem and the energies that keep the problem in place, I can do that. Although the Course in Miracles says there is a limit beyond which the Son of God cannot miscreate. We find that in our own individual lives. If you mess up enough in your life, you're either going to fall to your knees on some level or you're going to die. There's just, you know, you can just be so dysfunctional so long before it's not going to work for you. But that's true collectively as well. You can be completely irreverent and irresponsible towards the planet just so long before it starts showing us who's boss. We can behave in ways where we've allowed money to replace our love for each other so much and in such a corrupt way that all kinds of things are just falling apart at the seams on this planet just so long. This will not go on forever. The fact that we organize our entire civilization according to economic values rather than humanitarian values, that we seem to think we don't have to live in a moral universe. It doesn't matter what our relationship is to each other as people, what our relationship is to future generations, what our relationship is to the planet, what our responsibility is to life, what our responsibility is to a divine source. We can act like that due to the fact that we think like that just so long before it will become completely unworkable. And it is part of the arrogance of the mind that does those things to think that we can just get away with this forever. We learn in our personal lives, no, you can't. You will surrender or you will die. I mean, if you look at the various addictive things that we do in our individual lives, whether it's drugs or alcohol or weight gain, and whatever the addiction, when it's an addictive thing, these are life-threatening conditions. Your addiction is not just out to inconvenience you. Your addiction is out to kill you. And so our collective addictions to fear and to the illusions of things that will make us happy, rather than knowing that the only real happiness will come from being in right relationship with the rest of life, that is a force that is not just out to wreak a little havoc. And actually, we do know this. You read the newspaper any day, and you see what's going on this planet, and it's like intellectually we sort of know this. But it's like we're living at a time where it's like a slow car crash. And we can kind of see what's happening on this planet, and that it's there's something terrible. There's some terrible trajectory that we can see. We can see it environmentally. We can see it in terms of wars and atrocities. But we're just kind of stunned, I think. It's not, I don't believe that we're apathetic. I don't believe we're apathetic. I don't think the people of the planet are apathetic. But the Course in Miracles does say that some people would rather die than change their minds. Now, we can change this in the twinkling of an eye. Because, as the Course in Miracles says, God has a plan. God's plan is called the Teachers of God, the plan of the Teachers of God. And the teachers of God are anyone who chooses to be one. The Course says they come from all religions and no religions. They are those who have heard the call. And that call is going on in all of our hearts all the time. I was speaking to a group yesterday, and it was a group of professional women who were all leaders in various corporate situations, business, traditional stuff. And I was talking about women and women's responsibilities, And I was talking about the fact that, you know, for a long time the conversation was how do women get power. Now the conversation needs to be more, what do we do with the power that we now have? And about the 1 in 4 American children who are food insecure and the 17,000 children who die on this earth from starvation every day and the fact that we don't have air quality safety standards in America's public schools. All these things that by now we're all learning. The fact that because we don't have we don't have free nursery school, so people who can afford it in the United States send their kids to nursery school. People who can't afford it don't send their kids to nursery school. The kids who didn't go to nursery school then are behind on their first day in kindergarten. We have 2 years for them to catch up. If they do not catch up in 2 years, there will then be a 50% chance that they will one day be in prison. How immoral is that? I said to a U.S. congressman, a good guy, but I said to him once, I said, you know, congressman, there are no air quality safety standards in America's public schools, and that 40% of all children and teachers we know to be adversely affected in their respiratory systems already? And his response to me was, yeah. You know, see, what we got to do is we got to come up with an economic argument for why we should fix that. And I looked, I said, no, that was not the right answer. What we have to ask ourselves is why would we ever need an economic argument for why we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can that our children can breathe? We're like so upside down and it's gone so far. However, when I was talking to these women, they were great women, And these were women, like I said, very empowered in their lives. And I didn't find that these women didn't care at all, or that they were unaware of, you know, certain base things. They were very cool. But the question I heard from everyone was, what do we do, what do we do, what do we do? This is where the Course in Miracles is so amazing with this plan of the teachers of God. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I don't know what you're supposed to do. God's not going to give me instructions for you. God's not going to give you instructions for me. The guidance system is such that once we make ourselves available, once we say, use me, then the miracle starts like this, and that's the twinkling of an eye. Dear God, use me. And that is as true of global warming as it is true of something in your individual life. First thing you got to do is your own mind and your own atonement, which means in the collective problems, particularly difficult, because if we are concerned about the collective problems, we are more tempted to be angry at someone who we think was the one who created the problem. So that's the first thing. If you can't think compassionately and lovingly and without blame towards the person or people who you think created the problem, then you actually cannot be used as the teacher of God, i.e. a demonstrator of love, i.e. a channel of the miraculous that will change this thing around. So that's not only true in my own life. Okay, where am I being judgmental? Where am I being blaming? It's like many years ago when I was back, shows you how long ago this was, I was talking about Ronald Reagan. And I was talking about Caspar Weinberger and all these hawks. And I had this like waking dream, this man with a clipboard said, excuse me, Ms. Williamson, you were in the hawk column. I said, no, I'm not a hawk. I'm not a warmonger, I'm a peacenik. And it was, no, you are at war with Ronald Reagan, you're at war with Caspar Weinberger. It says you're at war with the entire American defense establishment. So my war made me the opposite of a solution because there were missiles in my head. And that doesn't mean we don't hold systems accountable. It doesn't mean that we're not passionate in our debate. That's what a free society is. But we're being asked to be miracle workers, not just fixers of the problem. Because the mind that would see us as having to fix the problem is the same mind that manufactured the problem. And that's the evolutionary leap that is available to us on the planet today. Dear God, you know what my weaknesses are. Dear God, you know what my strengths are. You know, the Course in Miracles says, don't worry that you're not more advanced than you are. Because the people who you are sent to teach, i.e. to demonstrate to, are half a step behind you. If you were more advanced, who would teach them? So we're all assigned to each other. We're all teachers, the Course says, and we're all students. And what I find interesting in my life is it's not only that in some situation I'm the teacher and in some situation I'm the student. It's more nuanced than that. In different relationships, some aspect of this relationship, I'm the teacher, and in another aspect of this relationship, I'm the student. In this aspect of life, you're ahead of me and you teach me. In another aspect of life, I'm ahead of you and I teach you. It's the same two people. But when we are seeing ourselves as part of this great evolutionary cause, whereby we're now seeking to do for the planet the same thing that we're all trying to do for our own lives or we wouldn't be here, then we're recognizing that the same miraculous power that can redeem an individual, I was blind and now I see, the same power which takes you from the depths of your addiction or the depths of your despair, the depths of your depression, the depths of how you felt when your life simply did not work, and has brought you or is bringing you to a place where things are pretty damn good. That same power is impersonal. Saving a species to that power is no different than saving an individual. But the way to have the redemption in your own individual life, it could only come from a level of surrender and, dear God, do for me what I can do for myself. You take charge, because God knows I didn't get it right until now. I'm overthinking, I can make this right. I recognize that I so can't. I'm ready to do it your way. Okay, tell me who I need to forgive. Tell me what I need to take responsibility for. Tell me who I need to be compassionate towards. It's pretty obvious if I open my eyes and see. And what's happening now is that enough of us are getting, not to the level of enlightened master perhaps, although I think there are enlightened masters on the planet. Enough of us, though, have gotten to the point, not that we're enlightened masters, but we're good enough that it's time to stop pretending we're not ready. Not that we're saying, okay, I'm perfect and I'm an enlightened master, but where it is time to say, whatever I can do, where I am. Because our generation has got to stop making excuses for why we're not yet showing up for life. It's too late. And then the amazing thing is that once you stand on that ground, I don't know how to be a grown-up, but I'm willing. I don't know how to be mature, but I'm willing. I don't know how to be a serious adult, but I'm willing. I don't know how to be conscious, but I'm willing. I don't know how to really do it, but I'm willing. You know, you realize that when you allow God to parent you, this transforms the human parental relationships. We're all walking around so I was talking to somebody recently. Who was it? Oh, I do remember. And she was talking about her parents. Well, nobody showed me how to do that. Nobody showed me how to do this. And I said, nobody showed any of us. But when you realize that really your earthly father is not your real father, your earthly mother is not your real mother, God is the spiritual parent. And in reconnecting to that, we reclaim what the Course in Miracles calls our divine inheritance. You are entitled to miracles, the Course in Miracles says, because of who you are. And in any moment that we say, use me, I am willing to not be angry, I'm willing to not be negative, I'm willing to be compassionate, I'm willing to be in service, I'm willing to be here for the great we rather than me, I'm willing to be in my innocence, I'm willing to practice these principles, then none of us, the Course says, has any more or less potential or any more or less power to be used by God for the salvation of the world. And remember, all that it means to see that salvation of the world, the only thing to be saved from is our insanity. Everything we think we need to be saved from is a product of our insanity. So we don't need to be saved from the symptom. We need to be saved from the disease. And the disease is, as Gandhi said, that humanity is not in its right mind. Now, what you're supposed to do with that is none of my business. That's not, as I said, each and every one of us has a highly, what the Course calls a highly individualized curriculum. Just as a cell has its own entelechy, its own natural intelligence, and knows what to do. And when it goes off on its own, that's, as we talk about here, a malignancy. That's what cancer is, when the cell says, nope, I don't want to contribute, I just want to do my own thing. It's called cancer. And what has happened on the planet, the ego is like a malignancy of the human race, of the human consciousness. And we are all returning to our natural entelechy. And that is what we find through prayer, that is what we find through forgiveness, that is what we find through meditation, one moment at a time. In some moments we get it right, and then the next moment we don't get it right, we got reactive, we got angry, we got judgmental, whatever. That's all right, we just continue to the next moment we get it right. And for those of us who are students of the Course, we get that by reading the book and by doing the exercises in the workbook, it is a training. It's like having a trainer. It's a training of the mind every day. And it doesn't take work. It's like a sentence, reading a paragraph maybe. But it changes our minds. And the only thing that's going to change this world is if we change our thinking. And there is a plan, and a miracle is possible. But the Course in Miracles tells us not only can we not do it without God, God cannot do it without us. And on a collective level, it is the plan of the teachers of God. And the fact that we've been immature, we don't have to be immature this moment. The fact that we've been self-indulgent, that's fine. We don't have to be self-indulgent this moment. That's what it means in Corinthians. When I was a child, I played with the toys of childhood. I used to see us through a glass darkly. In any given moment, we can be our better selves. We can just be available. And that's what the Course in Miracles calls the holy instant. It's not after I get smart enough. It's like right this moment. And people can read it because subconsciously everybody knows everything. And when we are in that place, as I said, the primary responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept the atonement for himself. If we are practicing that holy instant in this moment, I will not let judgment, blame, reactiveness get in the way, because if I am thinking this person, that person, whatever, this problem is so terrible, then I am not allowing my mind to be a conduit for the only answer that will produce a miracle. And if here tonight, this idea, that thinking, makes even a dent. Remember, the Course in Miracles says 5 minutes spent with the Holy Spirit in the morning is enough to guarantee that he will be in charge of our thought forms throughout the day. So we're all here because we're looking. We're looking for the answer. And remember, the Course says there's only one answer. Only one problem and one answer. And that is true not only in our individual lives, it's true collectively as well. We have some problems on this planet. Now it's time, as they say in AA, to step into the solution. God knows there are problems on the planet. God has heard the prayers of those who suffer on this planet. God has sent help. God has sent you. Many are called, but few are chosen, the Course says, means everybody's called. Few care to listen. And we're here to listen together. And the Course in Miracles says an idea is stronger when it is shared. So as we now enter a space, knowing that none of us on this planet is perfect, but the spiritual universe, which is the truth of who we are, is perfect. And it's as close to us as our own breathing. It's not out there, it's here. And in any given moment, when we allow ourselves to be aligned and centered with the love of God, then even on this planet, you are perfect. And it's not anything you're going to be more capable of tomorrow than you're capable of today. It's not anything you'll be more capable of after the next seminar than you are capable of now. And the Course in Miracles says it is not arrogant of us to believe that. It is humble of us to believe that. And so let's do that miraculous thing of remembering that and believing that together. So together we take a deep breath and we close our eyes. And now, in the presence of holy remembrance, we allow ourselves to think of something, and it might be more than one thing, in our own lives that is for us a problem. We allow it to exist within our minds. And now we allow our mind to remember these things. There is no order of difficulty in miracles. That which is a problem to me is a miracle waiting to happen for God. I cannot solve this problem myself because my ego self has helped make the problem. And in this moment, I am willing to have a miracle. In this moment, I am willing to give up all attachment to the idea I am a victim. For in this moment, I remember that God can miraculously solve this problem. in this moment, I am willing to give up my judgment, my blame, my anger, my reactiveness, my attack thoughts, and my fears. For I know that such thinking deflects a miracle. Rather, I am willing to now place this problem as I perceive it on the altar within my mind. For that which I place on the altar is then altered. And I invite the Spirit of God to enter my mind and to change my thinking about this situation. Whoever I am tempted to blame, whoever I am tempted to judge, whoever I am tempted to attack, remove from my mind, dear God, these thoughts. Return me rather to my true self, where I see beyond the realm of the problem to the truth that lies beyond. And now let us think about our collective problems. War, poverty, disease, starvation, environmental damage, global warming, cruelty to living things of any species. All of the problems that confront us collectively and that weary us and burden us. Let us remember that there is no problem too big for God to solve. There is no problem for which there is no miracle possible. And let us in this moment surrender our own minds, surrender all that we have and all that we are, and pray for God to use us. Use our hands, use our feet, use the words that we speak, the actions that we take, every thought and every feeling. And so align us, dear God, with the love through which miracles happen naturally, that we ourselves might be the conduits through which you extend the perfection that heals all things. And for those who feel that call and that desire to be so used, within the space of your own heart, make that invitation right now for God to use you, to direct you. The thoughts, the illumination that lead to the actions and the outcomes that in combination with the same miraculous scenarios of other people shall bring forth the healing of our world. Allow that divine alchemy to occur within your own heart. and allow yourself to feel the gratitude of God. And so it is. When it is comfortable for you, now open your eyes, and together we say, Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad that you enjoyed that. Thank you so much.